Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is The Good Life. Food, wine, and all the good things of life. Now, here's the host of The Good Life, Guy Bauer.
Well, good afternoon, and it is no kidding afternoon. It's not 12:05, it's 1:15 and change. Sorry for the Shockers' loss, but hey, what a good season. Mike Kennedy did a great job. But we're glad to have a full hour of food, wine, and fun for your ear, and thanks to my guests for being so patient out in beautiful sunny California. And the show today is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about The Urban Forager, a new book that it is really cool. Culinary Exploring and Cooking on LA's East Side by my guest, Alyssa Callow. She's up just next. Got a great wine of the week. It's from Spain. It's from the denomination of origin, Bierzo. Bierzo is in the far northwest part of the Iberian Peninsula, where Mencia is the primary red grape. This wine is 100% Mencia. Got some oak aging. Got a lot of fun. We'll tell you all about it in the second half. And also going to be telling you about the VIP wine event for River Festival coming up. It's right around the corner, June 4th. Divine Prophecy, brought to you by yours truly. You get to taste six wines paired with specific food items and have a lot of fun. I'll be pouring with my good friend Rob Bennett from Southern Glaciers. It's at River Fest, and it's June 4th at 5:30. You got to make reservations. I'll tell you how later. Now, finally, sitting here in the studio without talking is a real chore for me, as you may know. My guest, Alyssa Callow, is, I don't know, Alyssa. I don't think there's a good description for you other than a foodie supreme. She shares her recipes and food discoveries on her blog, The Urban Forager. There's a link at Good Life Guy. Former founding executive director of the Armory Center for the Arts in Pasadena. She's a consultant for nonprofit arts and education organizations, as well as a passionate cook and food explorer. She's born in L.A. She lives in Altadena, and the book is so cool. I saw it, The Urban Forager, and I thought, well, that sounds pretty neat. And right away I came to mind and thinking cruising the vacant lots of East L.A. looking for ramps and mushrooms. Well, that was wrong. When I got the book, I was excited. You'd be excited, too. The photography is beautiful. And Alyssa's nice enough to be a part of The Good Life today. Hi there, young lady.
Hi there. That's nice to be told I'm a young lady. It's very nice to be here.
Well, thanks for your patience, and I hope we'll let you go on time to get Mom out to lunch.
She's fine. Don't worry.
Good. The book, as I told you, is so interesting. It's such a unique way to lay out a cookbook, you know, and it seems like everybody's done something. This I've never seen before. The profiles of the chefs that you spoke with that make Los Angeles the food place that it is, but in particular East L.A. But let's, before we get into the book and some of the fun things you'll find, let's talk about you, your journey in food, what got you interested in food. We all know that everybody has a different pathway and how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Well, I think it started when I was really quite young. My parents were in the Peace Corps, and I lived some really important years of my life overseas. And if you live in Southeast Asia, as we did, the Philippines and Malaysia, the Philippines, we were in a very small community, actually what they call a little barrio. In Malaysia, we were in Kuala Lumpur, its capital city. Food is really an adventure there because you're very close to the source of where food comes from, number one. You go to markets that, at the time, you know, we really didn't have the kind of farmers market culture that Southeast Asia always has had. And so we basically foraged, to use a more broad term, all of my growing up years, where we'd go out and meet people who were actually growing the food and looking at food that was really quite different than what one would experience in the United States. And my father, being a Peace Corps director, used to say, you've got to try everything or you're insulting people. And so my first big food adventure was eating a lechon, which is a roasted pig, at a barrio feast. And I was given the roasted ears and tail of the pig as an honored guest. And my father leaned over and said, eat this. And I did, and it was delicious. It tasted like chicken skin. So I learned that if you just kind of take a deep breath and get curious and ask lots of questions, food is a really amazing way of learning about culture and community.
Wow. My wife and I just readmitted for the umpteenth time that while some people we know eat to live, we're the backside of that. We're the live to eat. And I think
we do too over here.
You know, and there's a subtle difference. And you know, I know people that fit in both of those categories. Most of my friends are similar to me, the live to eat part. Alyssa, you will be interested to know that my oldest son is coming back from Ukraine after nearly 2 years in the Peace Corps.
And really? Oh wow! How fantastic!
Yeah, he gets home the 15th of June, and he was. Oh. I think it's fair to say, and he would agree, a picky eater.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent almost a year in the Republic of Georgia where he really had to adjust because he wasn't into cheese. He would scrape cheese off pizza.
Oh, heavy-duty cheese land and noodles, too, there. So,
so there he is living with,
with
a host family that their main sustenance is cheese bread. So.
Yeah.
But and now he likes beets. He likes borscht, and it'll be fun to have him home for a little while.
Oh, that's good. He's probably less picky. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he has an appreciation for a lot of things. I can't wait to see what his first dining experience when he gets back home, his first requests are, either for us to cook or to go out. But let's talk about the book. First, I think... You live there. I've visited. I said Los Angeles is probably one of the coolest food places in the world because of diversity. Talk about, other than the fact that you kind of live there in Altadena, what prompted you to explore East L.A.?
Well, I want to just say that it's called the East Side because East L.A. is a very particular neighborhood, also known as Boyle Heights. So we were very careful to say East Side. And that is, just for your listeners' understanding, it's anywhere east of Hollywood. Most people kind of have an idea of where Hollywood, all the way past Pasadena, Altadena. So, so it's anywhere. It's this kind of eastern side of Los Angeles, and the reason is that I live right in the middle of it, and the food culture here is really exciting. As you said, partly because of all of the communities that have recently immigrated to this area, and there's more and more complexity in the kind of food. I think there are also new immigrants to these communities have realized that we can handle the unusual flavors and tastes and ingredients, and so they're not dumbing it down. There's, you know, in the old days, I remember when my dad would take us to a Chinese restaurant, it was chow mein, which doesn't, I don't even think, really get served anymore. It's really interesting food. And out of that also came these tiny markets that are largely developed to support the communities whose food requires it. So suddenly in the East Side especially, you have amazing mom-and-pop markets with ingredients that are beautifully sourced, really interesting, encouraging and inspiring for a cook that will try new things, who's adventurous. And the other thing is you have to just be kind of an open explorer and ask, you know, what is this and how is it used? And people like that. They like being, you know, a teacher. So I hope that helps.
It does. And thanks for clarifying the East L.A. versus the east of L.A.
East Side. Yeah. Well, there was a long discussion about what is the geographic area of this book, and we had to... be very careful because each neighborhood, I meant to say, there are so many little neighborhoods in Los Angeles. I think a lot of people feel a little overwhelmed by the size of Los Angeles, but it's really what I call a little checkerboard neighborhood type of place. And if you look at it that way, it's not so daunting. And in fact, at the back of the book, there's a section called The Search for Great Ingredients, and there's this beautiful map that the illustrator Simone Rain did for me. She's a wonderful young illustrator, and there's little numbered cues about where things are, and you realize, oh, there are these little food areas, one after another, and it gives you a kind of way of exploring Los Angeles through your tummy, which is kind of more fun, I think, sometimes.
You know, when you think back, and I don't know, I would guess just looking at your picture, we're probably close to the same age. Think mm-hmm. back, you know, maybe, it sounds hard to say it, but 40 years ago, compared to today, and the food items that you can get at the normal grocery store, not even getting off the beaten path and going to an Asian market or a Vietnamese market or an Indian market. I mean, it's phenomenal. You go into a big chain grocery store and they have things that we hadn't even heard of, you know, as
young adults. My niece is actually a marketing person for a food company, and she does research on this, and I love talking with her because she analyzes what's on supermarket shelves, and she said, oh, yeah, Shiraka is much more popular than ketchup now. There's way more aisles of that than ketchup, and she kind of has to analyze, like, where your sight lines are and what's put where, and she's totally agrees with you. It's a very different world. You know, when you go to a supermarket now and you see kimchi as a regular item, you know, that never was. So I'm excited about it. It has influenced not only the food of the particular culture, but it's influenced the traditional kinds of foods that that I would have eaten. Like, it's affected the way I cook crepes. It's affected the way I flavor stews. It's really, it's an exciting kind of connection now between these various cultures and the sort of what we would call traditional, so American food. It's wonderful.
And I like your comment about some of the new ethnic restaurants not dumbing down, not trying to be Americanized and doing the real thing and using real ingredients. And it makes me think
of...
It makes me think of those aha moments that I'm so fond of in my life where, you know, as a kid, the first time you tasted cilantro, the first time you had fermented black beans, the, you know, things that were off the beaten path then and that are commonplace today. And I think as a food world in our country anyway, there's still that enthusiasm for, I can't wait to try something different and have that aha moment.
I also think that because of that, like when you say fermented black beans, I think of a lot of foods that are kind of what I call food cousins to fermented black beans, and you start realizing, well, I could exchange this for that, and that becomes a really creative way of operating. You know, I always say, and a lot of the chefs and cooks in this book say, a really good pantry is probably the best start with cooking, and each one of them has a very different pantry. And so when I was interviewing them and staying and cooking with them, I was foraging through their pantries, too, to see what they kept. And it was a revelation for me. So now my pantry is just bulging because suddenly these things are adding to my own repertoire. So,
Which brings us to the first section of the book that I'm always thrilled when the beginning of a cookbook not only catches my attention because of beautiful photography, but more importantly, because that first section has a wealth of information worth the cost of the book, and you have what to keep on hand, cooking equipment, things that if you're new to the kitchen, you just got married, you're 22 years old. Well, nowadays, if you just got married, you're probably 35. But you know, that's important. But then everything changes past that section, in a good way. Because it's not your red and white checkered, here's the basic how to make meatloaf. There's really creative stuff, and I want to talk about some of that. But We need to take a break. Folks, if you just joined us, yes, we're running late because of WSU baseball, but we have the full hour, and that's just the first quarter gone down. My guest today is the author of The Urban Forager, Culinary Exploring and Cooking on LA's East Side. A beautiful book with beautiful photography. We'll talk about that more after this quick break. Please don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.